I'm Duncan MacLeod.
And I'm Craig Wilson.
This is Talk Central, episode 83 for Friday, 10 May 2013.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, still the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about the looming state-owned enterprise shakeup, local loop unbundling, ICASA raids, and Dimension Data's East Africa acquisition.
And as always, we pick the week's biggest winner and biggest loser. And Duncan and I will pick our product or app of the week.
That's right, but first we need to pay the bills, so we'll be back in a moment.
Hi, I just got your message to meet Mr. Mignana for my performance appraisal.
Oh, that was 2 weeks ago.
What?
Yeah, you were let go.
Oh, no, please. Oh.
Don't get ambushed. Call for backup. Get hosted Exchange from Vox Telecom, your off-site hosted email solution. Share calendars, contacts, task lists, and public folders, and archive all mail for half the price of an on-site server. Hosted Exchange from Vox Telecom. Backup for your business. SMS 31965, and we'll call you right back. Standard rates apply.
Welcome to the show. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Duncan.
How's it going?
Yeah, no complaints. It's Friday afternoon after all. It's very difficult to be upset at this time.
Absolutely. Well, nice weekend ahead. But there's one podcast between now and then, so let's jump straight into it. And lots to talk about. Something interesting which happened today, in fact, was a piece in the Mail and Guardian that broke it this morning, and it's actually a document we've been trying to get hold of for some time.
Indeed, with no luck, unfortunately.
Not having any luck, and we know now why. The Minister in the Presidency, Collins Shabane, is going to be announcing the outcome of the presidential committee that's been looking at into state-owned enterprises. He's going to publish that report next week, and some interesting information is starting to leak out ahead of that, and the M&G is speculating today that one of the big changes could be that all of the state-owned enterprises that currently sit and report into the Department of Communications and into the Minister of Communications could be moved out and into the Department of Public Enterprises, which is Malusi Gigaba's department.
Indeed, and I mean, this is a big move, but perhaps, you know, we've had mixed views from people. We've been calling around trying to get people's take on this.
Mostly positive, though.
Mostly positive, and the suggestion seems to be that consolidating the state-owned enterprises under one umbrella may make it easier to sort of align government's goals and avoid duplication and avoid sort of competition and you know, departments trying to outdo each other, and it may be good in that sense. There's also been the argument that perhaps keeping them separate keeps the individual parties on their toes, but I'm not sure how much weight I'll give to that. Of course, perhaps it's not a bad idea, given how little we've seen the communications-related state-owned enterprises actually do. I'm thinking in particular, of course, of Centec.
Exactly, and we've also seen how this particular department has interfered in the sector, and it's also problematic, I think, and it's a long-standing historical problem, is that this department sets policy for a sector or for entities which report into it.
Sure, it does seem like a sort of conflict of interest.
It's definitely a conflict of interest, and I think it would be fantastic if this department, all this department is left to do is to set policy. Rather than try to run these enterprises. One wonders, of course, what the politics was behind this, because none of this would happen, particularly when the SABC is included. It's the SABC, it's the Post Office, it's Telkom, and it's Centec that are potentially affected here. When the SABC is affected, it's very much a political decision, and you can be sure that there are political motivations behind any move. Of course, we know that Malusi Gigaba is very much a Zuma ally. Dina Pule, the communications minister's sort of political influence in all of this is less clear, but there's no doubt that Malusi Gigaba is very much one of the president's right-hand men.
Indeed, and also, of course, has a somewhat better track record than Minister Pule.
Yeah, although not stellar.
Not stellar, no.
He's quite controversial, you know, especially some of the decisions he's been making around the South African Airways.
Absolutely.
Which falls in his portfolio. So, anyway, I think generally it's a good move, because just on the basis of the fact that the department responsible for these state-owned enterprises shouldn't also not be setting the policy that affects them. So indeed. I think that's a good thing.
And this was part of the point made by, I spoke to Dennis Smith, the MD of BMI Technology earlier, and he was saying exactly this, that perhaps, you know, really the department should be focused on its role as a setter of regulation and a sort of policy body, policy-making body, and shouldn't really have to deal with the operational mess that these various companies present. And that perhaps the separation would allow the department the chance to sort of refocus on what really is, to his view, its sort of primary mandate.
Of course, it's laughable that the Department of Communications has a mandate of looking after these enterprises, given that the Department of Communications itself is such a disastrous mess.
Well, indeed.
There's a huge fight going on with the Director General, between the Director General and the Minister. There are all sorts of allegations of corruption against the Minister. Anyway, we're not going to rehash that whole story, but...
No.
But
perhaps the shake-up would be good on many fronts.
It would be, and I personally hope, and my view is, and I know not everyone agrees with me, I know Dennis Smith has got a different view on this, my view is that this should be the prelude to the Department of Communications being folded into the DTI and shut down. Literally, everything that can be done in the sector can probably be done by a dozen technocrats working in small, relatively small office space, consuming relatively few resources compared to what the DOC is currently consuming at the DTI campus in Pretoria.
Indeed, so far the department really just seems to show itself to be sort of bloated and inefficient.
Yeah.
And we could really do with a bit of the trimming of the fat. So let's hope that that's what comes out of this, as opposed to merely a sort of changing of the guard and a shifting from one department to another with a really just a sort of different figurehead and not much change beyond that. Let's hope it's a little bit more substantial than that.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. Anyway, let's move on to our next subject, and that's local loop unbundling. It's a story we've actually been pushing a bit this week. It's kind of died a death over the last few months, so we thought this week, let's resurrect it.
Indeed, really, we could do some local loop unbundling, but there's just been, it's very bizarre, right? The last we heard was that it was meant to be come into effect, or at least the simplest version of it, and that's Bitstream Access, was meant to come into effect in November last year. And then things went terribly quiet. Obviously, it hasn't come into effect, or we would have heard about it. And I spoke earlier this week to the heads of some of the big internet service providers, and the message from all of them was, we have no idea. We just have no idea what's going on. We've had no updates from the department, no indications of timeline, no indications from ICASA. And there's, of course, other issues relating to ICASA around this, and this has to do with... a case brought by Neotel into the Complaints and Compliance Commission, is it? The
Committee.
Committee, that's right, at ICASA. And if I recall, Neotel was seeking to get access to two of Telkom's exchanges.
That's right, Rosebank and Benmore in Sandton.
That's right. Benmore, I think, being one of the busiest exchange in the country, if not the continent.
I believe it's Telkom's most profitable exchange, yes.
Right.
By far.
Phenomenal. Anyway, Neotel was trying to get access to these two under the facilities leasing guidelines.
That's right.
And at least on paper, it seems to have succeeded.
Well, not on paper, because we've never seen the written judgment.
Well, that's true,
certainly
yes.
There was a verbal... judgment given
in Neotel's favor.
Telkom got very het up about the whole thing. I remember having a very angry conversation with one of their regulatory guys. But certainly Neotel won that case, and it's strange that it's gone quiet. I can only assume that what's going on is there's a lot of discussions going on in the background involving Telkom, involving Neotel, and involving ICASA, because I'm sure Neotel wouldn't have let this lie.
Absolutely. Unless there was something sort of a carrot on a stick.
Yeah, there must be. There's something. In fact, we know there's stuff going on because one of the ICASA councillors, Councillor Bachi, told Parliament a few weeks ago that they're still looking at LLU issues and looking at through the prism of facilities leasing and the outcome of that CCC decision. So I think there is stuff bubbling behind the background. What exactly is going to come out of it in the next few months is not at all clear at this stage.
No, indeed. But of course, in the meantime, we sit and wait and wonder. You know, LLU, I mean, this November deadline is just the most recent deadline to go flying past. It was originally, if I recall, meant
years
to be
ago.
Done years and years ago, but much like digital television, we've just seen deadlines come and go.
The original LLU report, which was published in, I think, 2007, called for full unbundling to have been completed by 2010.
Right.
So, yeah, a bit like digital television, and we might get there one day.
Perhaps,
but
yes.
Politicians and the regulator seem to be in no particular hurry.
No, indeed.
Speaking of the regulator, interesting developments this week with another raid.
That's
this
right.
This time on a much smaller company, a company based in East London, trading under the name Easttel. They're a company called Amatole. They're one of the underserviced area licensees that was licensed back in the early to mid-90s by the then minister, Ivy Matsepe Kasaburi.
I believe, actually, according to them, they are the last remaining underserviced area licensee.
Oh, really? I've heard rumors of that as well, yeah. I can't remember how many they were licensed originally, but there must have been at least half a dozen. They were licensed in specific regions of the country.
Mm.
Most stupid policy you could possibly imagine. Sure. Okay, let's solve the problem of the digital divide, and let's help grow small black business, but let's hamstring them by forcing them to only roll out in areas where it's completely unprofitable for them to do so.
Sure.
Anyway, that's the story of the UCL. So most of them have failed, as you say.
Yes.
So the last remaining, possibly, UCL this week was raided by ICASA for the alleged non-payment of spectrum fees. This follows the raid of a much bigger company, iBurst, or its parent, rather, Wireless Business Solutions, just last month. And that, we all know that is still bound up in legal Indeed. Processes. But yeah, they raided the company, but the matter then went very quickly to the District Circuit of the High Court in East London.
That's right, yeah.
We don't have a full High Court down there. It was very quickly overturned, and the search and seizure warrant that was granted to ICASA by the East London Magistrates Court was not only suspended, it was set aside. And Easttel has now resumed services, and Easttel/Amatole is now in discussions through their attorney, who happens to be Dominic Cull of Internet Service Providers Association fame, who are now in discussions with ICASA about settling any alleged outstanding debt ahead of a High Court hearing, which has been set down for the 29th of this month.
And of course, much like the WBS case, there's a lot of back and forth as to sort of he said, she said. And they're, you know, Easttel or Amatole are saying, well, we've actually got written documentation saying that we'd spoken to ICASA, acknowledged the outstanding debt, and that we were in the process of trying to come to an arrangement. Of course, ICASA, meanwhile, says that there had been an agreement in place to settle the outstanding license fees over a six-month period, and that the first payments were made in October and November of last year, and then no payments followed, which is part of the reason that this clampdown happened. But as much as I'm in favor of ICASA collecting the fees owed it and clamping down and sending a message that people can't just trample all over it, it is bizarre, as a couple of people have said to me, that really, it has a couple of mandates, and one of them is to administer the sort of thing, and the other one is to ensure that consumers aren't disadvantaged. And I feel like with these raids, we're certainly seeing a precedent set, which is if you go in and you raid and you are, you remove equipment and services get interrupted, the court is going to find in favor of the company in question for the sake of the consumers who've now suddenly unsanctimoniously been disconnected.
I think ICASA is in a bit of a corner here as well, though, because they've got this huge problem. There are hundreds of millions of rand in outstanding license fees owed to the organization. What do they do if they don't go in and start raiding these places? Then surely there's just going to be this continued disregard for the payment of licenses.
This is true.
But perhaps ICASA shouldn't be going after the small guys first. Perhaps they should be going after the big guys who owe them money. And most notably, they should be going after the South African National Defence Force, which owes them the most. I think it's an amount of almost 200 million rand.
Indeed.
We all know why they don't go knocking at the doors of the SANDF, because the SANDF has tanks.
and political ones as well as literal ones. Yes.
Yeah, indeed. But I do feel for ICASA, because they do need to collect this money, and they can't allow lawlessness to pervade the industry.
It's a tough position to be in. But of course, the other problem is getting its sort of books in order. I mean, what we've had occasionally too is these disputes between ICASA and the licensees as to who owes what. And we've seen instances where it's been said, oh, well, we're negotiating a settlement. Well, it seems baffling. There shouldn't be a settlement. A company owes X according to such and such a formula. Yeah. This should just be easy to tell.
Cool. On the last news story of the week, which I think was worth touching on, is Internet Solutions, or I should rather say Dimension Data's acquisition of the Access Kenya Group in up in Kenya. Interesting deal. I forget the exact figure now. I think it was around 360 million rand. One of the biggest deals that Dimension Data has done in the region.
And quite a good premium, if I remember, based on the market cap of Access Kenya at the time.
Certainly a premium on the share price. and a big move by Internet Solutions and Dimension Data into that East African region. And I think a vote of confidence in the Kenyan market and the growth that people are expecting there, especially following the recent peaceful elections that they had.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're seeing, there's not a day that goes by really that I don't see another story coming out of Kenya one way or another, just about the sort of scale of the tech scene there. And we've got people rolling out, talking about rolling out 4G networks and, you know, all sorts of things. It really is becoming quite a, dare I say, hub. I know the iHub there is particularly famous, but it really is becoming the sort of East African tech center. And beginning to give places like South Africa a run for their money as the sort of tech capital of the continent.
Well, Kenya is expecting to complete its migration from analog to digital terrestrial television by September of this year. We haven't switched it on yet.
Indeed, and of course, it's actually, there's been various comments about it sort of chastising itself over this failure because it had hoped to do so by December of last year.
Yes.
But the fact that it's still hoping to do so before the end of this year does put it rather far ahead of the rest of us.
Yes. Minister Pule, are you listening?
Yeah.
Anyway, our winner and loser are actually kind of related this week. Our winner this week, Craig, do you want to pick it up?
Sure. Our winner this week has got to be Ushahidi, and in particular, its Brick project. Now, this is a company based in Kenya that grew out of the election violence in 2008 as a method to track reports.
Well, not literally out of the election
violence. No, but as a result of, shall we say, as a method of a sort of company that wanted to track data on reports of violence and then map this data and try and, you know, make sense and use of it. And it's gone on to work in various other sort of crowdsourcing data projects and has now branched out into hardware. And they are running a Kickstarter project for this product called Brick, and that's Brick without the I, BRCK, and in the first 5 days it's raised $66,000, well, more than that now, of the $125,000 it hopes to raise. And the Brick itself is a piece of hardware that will take a SIM, possibly multiple SIMs in future versions, also connect to wired Ethernet, as well as act as a Wi-Fi bridge if necessary. And the idea really is that they're calling it your backup generator to the internet. And the thing is that it's meant to be rugged and get you online in any number of ways, using any means possible. And it's really designed with the African market in mind. And it's just great to see that how successful this project has been. Some of the big backers.
The Kickstarter's been successful.
Indeed, the Kickstarter. I mean, you know, as a sort of African project, it's got a number of notable backers too. Including the likes of author Clay Shirky. You know, if you go onto Kickstarter, you can actually look at who's backing each tier of the process. You know, those who do back the project get different sort of perks depending on how much they're willing to contribute. But yeah, it's just been a runaway success in its first few days, and we'll keep an eye on it. But it looks like it will reach its target, and the bricks should go into manufacture soon.
Great stuff. I look forward to actually getting one in my hands and taking a look at it and seeing how it's built and what's actually inside.
Indeed, yeah. Well, they're hopefully not taking it apart to check that, but...
I might get one just to do that.
You know.
Anyway, our loser this week, I'm afraid, is ICASA. Spectrum-related again, but it seems that they've made a bit of a mess up in providing numbers to the Minister of Communications, who in turn provided those numbers to Parliament in answer to a question from the Opposition Democratic Alliance and its MP Marion Shin, who put out numbers which has got a number of operators, Cell C most notably, who put out a statement on the subject, which it must be noted ICASA hasn't responded to, lambasting the regulator for putting incorrect figures out into the marketplace.
And we've had similar complaints from Neotel before as well.
Neotel also took exception to the numbers that were published by ICASA, and were published by rather by the Democratic Alliance in answer to a question posed in Parliament. There was an amount, I think, of 40 million rand that ICASA was claiming Neotel owed, which it flatly denied. Celsius flatly denied that it owes the amount, I think it was 107 million rand.
That was in that region, yeah.
In that region. You know, ICASA, this doesn't reflect well on you. If you're going after companies to collect unpaid spectrum license fees, you better make sure you know how much they owe you.
Indeed, indeed.
Right, before we call the show for the day, we need to do our Apple product pick of the week. I'm picking not really an app, it's an operating system, really.
Yours is a little bit different, yeah.
Yeah, I've been using it on my Samsung Galaxy S3 for a while, and I'm really, really enjoying it. It's a custom ROM, for those who don't know what that means. It's basically rooted my machine, created root access on my machine, and installed a custom operating system on the device based on Android.
The joys of Android, eh?
I've installed something called CyanogenMod. mod, which is one of the more popular custom mods, and it's really brilliant. It's amazing how much work the open source community has put into some of these custom ROMs. It's really nice, and I really prefer it to the TouchWiz interface that came with the default software on the S3. I've been playing with the S4 over the last week as well. I really like that. The TouchWiz obviously didn't put CyanogenMod mod on the review product and send it back to Samsung.
No, they don't take kindly to it.
But I've installed on my S3, and you know, if you're an Android user and you've got a phone that you've been using for a while and you're a bit bored with it, it's really easy to root your phone and to put the software on. There are some dangers to it, so be warned, you could brick your device, although it's unlikely if you follow the instructions carefully. But if you Google it, you'll almost certainly find a custom ROM, or find a way of rooting your device and then installing a custom ROM on it. And it's a great way of tinkering and really giving yourself a new phone, if you like.
Indeed, and we are absolutely not responsible if it doesn't work out or you don't follow the instructions.
Yes, do not do this at home unless you know what you're doing.
Yes.
Craig, what's your pick?
So my pick this week is bizarre. It's called Rando, R-A-N-D-O, and it's not nearly as dirty as it sounds. So this sort of made its way to my desk this week, and I have been playing with it quite a lot today, and I'm just a little bit more fascinated perhaps than I ought to be. So it's an image sharing service of a sort, but it's almost an anti-social service. So it's sort of taken the ideas of Instagram and built something with opposite ideals. The idea is it's a very, very minimal interface. You open the app up, there's a little circle that allows you to take an image. The images themselves are round to match Rando's logo and to make them a little bit different. And the idea really is that it's a peephole on other parts of the world. You take an image and you tell it to upload, and it gets sent to another random user somewhere else in the world with a general map of roughly where in the world it's come from. In exchange, I then get a rando back from somewhere else. And it's been pretty fun just to see sort of these random snippets from people who you're never going to meet, you can't find, you can't like the image, you can't share the image.
What's the point?
So that, well, this is the point really is that as opposed to, say, posting images for the gratification of likes and nods and votes and comments,
why else would you do it? Well,
the idea is just to share interesting images, and perhaps to share interesting images from your corner of the world specifically. Some of the highlights I've had have been some cityscape shots from South Korea. I've actually had a very large number of South Korean shots. They seem to be the biggest users of the app, even though it was built by Americans. And the most recent image I got back was a picture from Iceland of a man sticking a pencil up his nose. So perhaps not the most serious app. But I found it great fun, and I've really enjoyed taking my own images, and you get a little notification telling you where they go, and every now and then it's in a script I can't even read, so I don't know where my pictures have gone off to.
Interesting.
But that's Rando. It's free. It's incredibly simple to use. It's one of the simplest interfaces I've seen, and I'm gradually collecting a selection of funny images, including Icelandic pencil sniffers.
Which platforms does it run on?
At the moment, it's available for Android and for iOS. The Android version actually came out very recently.
Okay.
But yeah, that's my pick this week. It's pretty frivolous, but it's quite a lot of fun, and it's a nice take on the idea of sharing images from mobile devices.
Frivolous is Friday. It is a Friday after all.
Well, quite.
Great. Well, speaking of Fridays, I think that's it. Time to call it a day. It's time for the weekend. Have a great one, everyone. Thanks for listening to the show, as always. And if you've got any feedback, you can send it to info@techcentral.co.za. From myself, Duncan McLeod, and from Craig Wilson, until next time, cheers.